This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod.
And you are here with Blackness's biggest fans. I am Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings. So, I'm about to make a really big life decision.
Okay.
And it's about my kid.
Hey.
Hey. Say hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
So that's Eve, my daughter. And my wife, Carla, who these are people who I imagine you're familiar with.
We've met. We're familiar.
So anyway, that was me coming home the other night on the eve, if you will, of a big decision.
Okay.
After we put Eve to bed, you know, we sat down on the couch. And Carla had her glass of red wine. We got cozy.
Get close to me. We're married. We can do that. Okay. So, I mean, we need to put Eve in school.
We do.
It seems like we're like...
Okay, so Eve's two. And like this is going to be her first like real school experience. And we're trying to decide on a preschool. But the thing is, Carla wants to send her to an Afrocentric school.
I see.
And okay, look, I know what Afrocentric school is supposed to be like, you know, centering the Black experience and talking about Black history in a much more substantive way. And don't get me wrong, I have a lot of problems with the way that most schools, like, center white and European experiences.
Okay.
But that said, is an Afrocentric school definitely better? Like, in my head, the details of what happens there are just fuzzy. Like, is it a lot of story times about ancient Egypt mixed in with some kente cloth? It just seems like a bunch of people trying to teach my daughter what it means to be Black. And, like, I have a lot of feelings about that.
Mm.
My biggest one being, I don't really trust other people to do that. I'm not gonna lie. It's hard to be like, I don't want my child to have a strong, you know, foundation of Blackness. Like, you know, I want her to grow up steeped in white supremacy and, you know, all this stuff. But like the idea, you know, everybody's idea of integrating Blackness into an educational conversation isn't the same. You know what I'm saying? Like there are people who are, quote unquote, very pro-Black who still look at certain depictions of Blackness as problematic. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of really toxic ideas surrounding respectability politics. Mm. You know, the pull your pants up.
Yeah. And I feel like the Blackness in our home mm-hmm. is very like all-inclusive Blackness.
It's pretty broad.
It's very broad. And I just want, you know, I want her to grow up not demonizing aspects of her Blackness. Mm-hmm. And like, do you not share that same fear? Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's hard to, even now, even though she's still so young, it's hard to kind of delineate where my desire for what I didn't have stops and where my desire for what she could have starts. And this is something that I mean, I obviously feel very strongly about because I didn't have it. So yeah, I went to very white schools, K through 12. I don't feel like I graduated with a very strong sense of like who I was as a Black woman, as a Black person in general. There was no Black girl magic. You know, I had a lot of the, I don't want to downplay it, but a lot of the typical like self-hate of like, oh, I'm too dark. You know, I had a lot of issues with my hair and like it really fucked with my head for a very, very long time. And it just didn't feel uplifting or Supportive in the way that I really, really needed. I kind of had to get there on my own.
I do get what she's saying. And, like, that's part of the reason I went to an HBCU. Like, doing that really, really helped me to understand my own Blackness and just, like, our history.
Yeah, I mean, same.
And that was just so, so important for me.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, I had a lot of logistical questions about how exactly all of this works.
I'm curious as to why that starts at, like, 2. Like, and maybe this is my own ignorance about, like, early childhood development or whatever, but I know I want her to be able to count. Like, I know I want her to be able to, you know, maybe, like read her ABCs. I also just don't know what she's supposed to be able to do. So, like, with the culture stuff, like, I think that would sound even better if she was in, like, second grade. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I said all of that. And hopefully implying that, yes, ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, like,
that are also on the table.
Definitely, yeah, important.
So after this conversation with Carla, like, my head was swimming with questions. Like, Eva's a little kid. She needs, you know, repetition and simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And lessons around Black history and culture can just get really, really complicated. You can't really put Jim Crow history on flashcards. Like, you need nuance, you know?
You can't really distill that.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And do I really want to put the responsibility of teaching, like, our daughter about race in somebody else's hands?
Mm.
So I decided to do the thing that I usually do with big decisions.
Well, you made a spreadsheet?
Yes, actually, I did make a spreadsheet. But after my conversation with Carla, I also just, like, went into research mode. I, you know, did some reporting. I called up experts and, you know, people who went to Afrocentric schools to just answer some of my questions. So I began my quest for answers by calling Iman.
Like our best friend, Iman.
Yeah. Like, she went to Afrocentric school when she was little.
I'm very curious. Very curious to hear what she had to say.
Hello?
How you doing, Iman?
I'm doing okay.
I wanted to ask her, like, what was it like learning about, you know, Blackness at the same time as you learn about your ABCs?
I remember, like, counting to 100 in Swahili.
Can you still count to 100 in Swahili?
No.
Do you know how high can you count? Can you count to 5?
No, I don't remember any of it. And I felt like I remember reading when I went to public school and Afrocentric school. I don't remember what I learned. I feel like kids at that age, you know, should be focusing on reading and writing and arithmetic. And, like, you have not, like, lived enough to be burdened and saddled with, you know, these ideas and these notions about your racial identity.
Mm-hmm.
Reading comes first and knowing your numbers. And you don't need to know the Swahili version of your numbers. Like, that's not going to help you.
So this kind of gave me some pause. Like, learning Swahili is awesome. You know, growing up, Jumbo Means Hello was one of my favorite books.
It's a great book.
It's a good book.
It's a great book.
And, like, I know that's not the only thing they're going to be doing. But, like, I'm a little nervous that, like, the focus might be more on learning the cultural things, you know, than learning, like, the core academic things she's supposed to learn at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that.
But I didn't want to just rely on Iman's experience, so I needed to expand my sample size. And, like, I heard Carla talking about her friend Marion, that she went to an Afrocentric school.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to her, and she had a much more positive connection to it.
We did The Wiz as our school play.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was the standby to play Dorothy. And then
still counts?
No, because then with a little mojo and some, you know, rain dances, little other Dorothy got sick.
Wow.
Night before.
Look at God.
Just blessing him with the flu, Lord. Yes. So I was like, I am Dorothy. Do you even? I'm going to ease on down this road and you're going to follow me.
Real talk, that I would probably be sitting up there bawling like a little baby. Seeing all these little Black kids singing The Wiz.
Yes.
Like,
you know, it can feel forced if you see a little Black kid playing a part that is for white people. It's like them feeling the need to have that performance and giving the children something to work for and making it be a Black production.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I would have gotten that at another school.
The Wiz is one of my favorite movies, and I always wished that my school could have done it because I was obviously deep in the theater, which explains a lot. But
that was actually
there weren't enough Black people. It's crazy when you're a kid, you're so starved for some sort of image like that. So, like, to be able to do a production of The Wiz, that is exciting and that is adorable.
Yeah, I mean, it's cute, but like a lot of that didn't really become important to me until high school, you know? And we're talking about really, really young kids. Yeah. Like, you know, for some people, like Marion, it really, really matters. But for others, like Amon, you know, it was too early for her to get it. Okay, so at this point, my research has all been, like, anecdotal. But now I'm feeling like I just need some facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually put my questions to someone who I would consider an expert. Dr. Keisha Bentley Edwards. She's a developmental psychologist and a professor at Duke University.
I look at how we develop. I look at it not only from a racial and cultural perspective and see how race and racism affects your life, but also how it affects your life differently at different developmental stages.
Are you the person that all your friends go to for this
information? Yes. Yes. I get a lot of calls and emails and text messages that start with, am I crazy or ... am I supposed to act a fool?
Dr. Bentley Edwards, the good doctor, if you will, she cut straight to the point. Like, kids start to understand color and race at very specific ages.
Babies recognize that there are color differences. Mm. For African-American children at around 3 years old, that is when you know that it actually has a meaning. Even if you can't process and have a conversation about it, you start to know that there's something different about my skin and it means something. It means something to the broader world.
Honestly, I just thought I had more time until we actually had to, like, deal with that. Like, all the stuff Carla said about self-image, whether Eve is proud of her skin tone, her hair, all that stuff starts really soon. Hmm. And Dr. Bentley Edwards told me it's, like, even more important than I thought.
A high racial identity is related to higher academic achievement. So that means that the higher your racial identity, so the more proud you feel of being a Black person or how you see yourself as a Black person, those folks tend to also do well in school. But it can't just be proud to be Black and put a kente cloth on. There has to be strong academics and learning and social development as well.
That makes sense to me. Like, you know, if you're feeling self-conscious, you're going to be focusing on that. You're not really going to be focusing on school.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me, too. And, like, if you run with that logic, it seems like an Afrocentric school would definitely make kids less self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that they would come out being really proud of their Blackness. So, in theory, Afrocentric schools for the win, you know? Case closed.
Case closed. I mean, wait, is a episode over?
It is not. The thing is, like, I know from experience that there's more than one way to be proud to be Black. Like, growing up, I learned a lot of stuff that I thought was a part of what it meant to be Black that I later realized was just kind of bullshit, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, I grew up thinking it was my job as the Black man to lead my household and my people out of the darkness, you know?
Oh, I know.
So this actually came up. I was talking to someone else I know who went to Afrocentric school, our friend Jordan.
I love Jordan.
How did they teach you about your role, like, as a man, I guess, like, mm-hmm. in relationship to, you know, to women?
Chivalry was extremely important there.
Mm-hmm.
So the man was the protector and made sure that we looked out for the women in the school. I'm a gay male. I mean, there was times where, like, I was maybe corrected for my, like, feminine traits.
Mm.
Like, I didn't start dancing until I was in high school. But if I had wanted to dance, I'm not really sure if it would have been embraced because it was kind of just, like, all the women dance and then all the men drum.
That's great. Okay, so Jordan's, like, he's an amazing dancer. And I know he's been passionate about it for a long time. And that's crazy to think that at such a young age, that if he had wanted to pursue something, that he actually turned out to have a really big talent for and really big love for, he wouldn't have been able to pursue it.
Exactly. Like, this is what I didn't want out of an Afrocentric school. Like, if Eve wants to drum, she's going to drum.
She will.
So that was bad. But, like, I also realized from talking to Jordan that, like, one bad experience doesn't just negate, like, the entire idea of Afrocentric education. Like, Jordan, for the most part, really loved his school, especially compared to the charter school he went to later.
One of the things that I didn't experience in Afrocentric school was the issue of skin tone. Mm. I'm extremely fair-skinned. Mm-hmm. Like, people wonder if my dad is white. Mm-hmm. I never had any comment made to me. It was never really an issue. It was just like, you know, they really embedded in you that Black people need to support one another and to not be distracted by, you know, creating issues with one another.
That is really cool.
Right? You know, like, I want Eve to grow up, you know, and, like, see another Black person mm-hmm. and be like, I want to help that person. You know, mm-hmm. I want to support that person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just there for them. Like, that to me feels awesome.
So are you sold on Afrocentric schools now?
Well, of course not. And, like, a part of it is because, like, in the time that I was doing all this, Carla had just wanted me to actually go straight to visiting an Afrocentric school. She didn't quite have all this in mind.
She didn't have all this in mind.
But now I feel like I know enough to, like, walk into an Afrocentric school and, like, honestly judge them fairly.
You know, Carla loves you. So unlike me, she's not going to roll her eyes. She's probably just going to smile and go with you someplace. But I just want to let you know that you did way too much.
I like to think that I put in extra effort, you know? But I don't think that's in school, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
It wouldn't be a bad thing. This is your child.
Exactly.
So I'll let it pass.
Thank you.
But Jesus Christ.
After the break, I put away the spreadsheets and get schooled.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
Welcome back. So, I told Carla that I was finally ready to go visit an Afrocentric school. And after a little bit of searching, we actually found one close to us. So, one morning before work, we hopped on a bus and headed over there. I was making a lot of little random jokes. It seems like we're about to walk into this mythical land, you know, of like I feel like the building is like a pyramid.
See a pyramid?
It's not a pyramid. It's like a brick building.
That's nice.
When we first walked up, I actually felt a wave of somewhat of relief because they had a sign posted that said that they were closed for Malcolm X's birthday. And I was like, whoa,
okay, maybe they see history like I see history.
You gotta recognize the important holidays. All right, and press the button.
So we press a button and they like buzz us in. And so like we walked in and to the left, there was this amazing picture of the Obamas. Like, it looks like regal.
There's a beautiful family portrait of the Obamas.
Right at the door.
With all their names beneath it.
Then we walk into the actual daycare and it's just this like massive room. And at that point, you hear just like this chorus of kids in the background.
Say hi, guys.
Hi.
They have a two-year-old, too. They want their two-year-old.
It's a very comforting sound to just hear like kids at play.
Yay.
And like Black History was everywhere.
I see you got the Black History Month sign. Is it Black History Month every month?
All year. We celebrate Black History all year. We have innovators who were born all throughout the year. We want to learn about those people all throughout the year, too, because it's just important for our children to know about their culture and the people who created things that you don't even think about, like a shoe or a refrigerator or the traffic light. It's just something that we're always going to talk about with them. So we want to make sure that's infused in the lessons, too.
There was a spot where a bunch of kids had colored pictures of Shirley Chisholm. And that, I mean, you know, that's really dope. Like, there were drawings of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X's glasses.
It's painted, and there's a little picture of Malcolm X attached to each one, and they say, happy birthday, Malcolm X.
So Friday is Malcolm X's birthday, so we definitely wanted to celebrate him, and we are always doing art, so we figured why not his glasses, which are one of the most iconic things about Malcolm X.
I want some green frames.
So there was a very nice woman, a head of admissions. She came up to us, and it felt like talking to your auntie. And that was really nice.
So this is our babies, our twos. And this group, they learn mostly through song and play. Because at 2 years old, that's really what they can take in, and that's the best way to try to work with them and try to reach them.
I'd heard people describe pieces of this. You know, oh, we learned Swahili. And actually being in the environment and seeing how those things happened in like a real setting made me understand that like, oh, you can teach the history and the culture and the learning at the same time.
Our children, you can see them learning about their culture and being able to repeat things about their culture in a natural fashion. It's just natural. Do we want them to be confident in their culture and their background so they can do whatever they want to do in the future, no matter where you are, what you're going to do.
And when we asked about all the activities she could do,
afternoon for them to do, we do, I always miss one, yoga, chess, Swahili, African dance class. We have an optional African drumming class. When you're older, you can do violin.
Everything was available to everyone. You know, the boys were gardening, and Eve could drum and dance. So, like, I'm looking around this classroom, and, like, this is a classroom I couldn't have even dreamed of as a kid. You know, and I start to realize, like, maybe I can trust these people. Like, maybe this is the right thing for Eve. I mean, everybody tells you, you can't do everything right. And you hear that, but you immediately disregard it. Because, like, I look at her and I see her as an opportunity to, like, to create a happy person. And you want to do everything possible to make sure that this person is happy and grows up and is just excited about their prospects for the world and their future. And it's tough because at that same time, you know all the ways it can go wrong. There's everything from like the smallest mistakes where she has a bad day to she might not be prepared for the difficulty that is inherent in being who she is. And you see all of those possibilities in almost every decision. Them participating in teaching her how to be Black was scary. And now, it's now comforting. Because there is a level of trust there now. Like, I understand what they're trying to do. And now that I've decided that this is something I want for Eve, I can let go of some of my own experiences. This is a thing I'll have to con- I have to get used to doing over and over again. I'm excited for her to walk in there and see all the stuff on the wall and like her figuring out what she wants to go and play with or manipulate first. You know, to see that moment of hesitation, because she always kind of has this moment of like, do I trust this? She's her dad's child. But then she's like, okay, that. I'm going for that.
You know what's the thing I keep thinking about now that you guys have decided that you're going to send Eve to an Afrocentric pre-K is like, what are you guys going to do to prepare yourselves? Because like, have you ever considered the fact that like, one day Eve's going to come home and just be way more woke than you guys? Like, she's going to come home, like, start the revolution. Like, maybe they'll like teach her how to wrap her head in school, and she'll come home one day like, I no longer subscribe to the hairstyles of the white man. She might get you guys on liberation-based veganism. We don't know.
That is
we
a very, know. Very high possibility.
Carla's a little more open to that.
I know.
Than
I am. That's going to be the next campaign.
Do you not want me to have any joy? Like,
The Nod is produced by me, Eric Eddings, with Brittany Luce, Kate Parkinson Morgan, and James T. Green. Our senior producer is Sara Abdurrahman. We are edited by Jorge Just and Annie Rose Strasser, with editing help from Van Newkirk II, Blythe Terrell, and Jonathan Goldstein. Special thanks to Sunny Bridges, Delana Brundage, and Asta Chaturvedi. Engineering from Cedric Wilson and Matthew Bull. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Additional music in the show by Bobby Lord and Talkstar. Brittany.
Are you lactose intolerant?
Yes, but now I feel like I want to drum, so I'm going to drum. Focus. Focus. It's confusing.
I see. I am feeling left out. I want to play. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.